just wanted to read one of the message from one of our patrons, Akiko, who shared this with us. And it's such a nice message. Literally was my booster for the last, through the last week. So it reads, started listening to some of your podcasts and reading transcript. They are so informative, humane, and strong. Anger is not something I usually associate with positivity, but your is justified and well-articulated anger, and it is inspiring. I wish you didn't have to show your heroic side like this, but Ukraine, to me, is a nation of brave and warm heroes. Just wanted to express that the quality of the work you do is outstanding. No way is my subscription a charity. It's a huge bargain. Slava Ukraini.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That was very nice. So yeah, folks, please check it, and if you have the means to support us, we'd be super grateful. But also, as Akiko said, this is not a bargain. This is a bargain. This is not a charity. We also provide very cool stuff as a bonus content and as a bonus services for those who support us on Patreon.
Yep, and we'll hopefully be developing more and more of that as we free ourselves up a little bit by getting extra help. So watch the space, and hopefully we'll have much more for you. We already have cool stuff, but we might have more of it.
Okay, and today we have Stas Olenchenko with us, and he is, this is the second time for him to join us, and we really wanted to re-invite him to talk about, first and foremost, his viral Twitter thread on language and Ukraine, something that comes up all the time. Stas, you were with us?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey,
so hey everybody,
to hear you. Look, are we gonna talk about this or whatever you would like also to talk about, because this is your space and you claim it, please. But before we do, and especially for those who haven't listened to the episode where you together with Maria feature your cool project that explains Ukraine on social media, can you educate everyone else and tell everyone else who you are, what you do, what your life has been like in since the start of genocide?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be back, and it's great to hear both of you. So my name is Stas Olenchenko. I was and still am a UX writer, so I write content for software products, the kind of content that you see in an interface. But also since the start of the war, me and Maria, who's a listener right now, I can see her, we have been doing this project, Ukraine Explainers, which is basically explaining various topics surrounding Ukrainian political and historical context in a very simple 10-card form. So we've been doing that for, I guess, 2 months already. And yeah, the thread that you were talking about, Maxim, it's not a part of Ukraine Explainers. Maybe I can talk a little bit about why.
Yeah. It's not. And also, Stas, for those who haven't seen your thread, if you could maybe briefly summarize what it was about and what you said and your story, because it was a personal story as well.
Sure. So while I was writing one of the cards about Ukraine, I realized that there was like an amount in story that I wanted to tell, but it was just not the kind of format that I could put into just 10 cards. And also, actually, the last time that I was here with Maria, we were talking a little bit about, feeling our Ukrainian identity more during the war and kind of feeling that ancestral emotions, basically. And actually, that talk inspired me to write this thread. So we were talking about it, and I realized I really wanted to tell the story of how my family got Russified, basically, because my ancestors from 100 years ago, they talked Ukrainian and they lived in Kiev Oblast, in Kiev District. And they were all just like Ukrainian speaking people. And gradually throughout the 20th century, we came to be a Russian speaking family. And so I was born in, and I grew up in a Russian speaking family. And I felt that as a Ukrainian, but Russian speaking, I felt that this is something that gets messed up quite a lot by any outsider. No matter if it's like a huge media outlet or just a single expert, single commenter. I just felt that this is a very complex topic, but also very underrepresented topic. So I wanted to like tell this story and also in that way tell this like a short history of millions of Ukrainians being Russified.
And you actually tell a story of several generations of your family, and you posted it with a picture from like was it the early 20th century from your family archives, and you tell also the story of your grandfather Stepan, right? And can you also tell us what was his experience with Ukrainian language and being forced into, learning Russian? Because I feel this is the story that encapsulates the stories of, I don't know, maybe 9 out of 10 of Ukrainian families, including mine. And I was greatly, deeply moved by it because I would just, basically can replace the names and tell the same story about my family as well.
Yeah, I mean, my great-grandfather, Stepan, he lived through a lot of shit that Soviets came up with. And again, like, I think his story is super common for so many Ukrainians back then. So he was a teenager when Soviets began collectivization in 1929. And his family had a small farm not far from Kiev. And they were warned by their neighbors that Soviets were coming and they're going to, take their farm, probably execute somebody or just send everybody to Siberia, which was, again, happening all over Ukraine. This was a super common thing. And because they were warned, they had the luck to prepare. So they just, grabbed their stuff and just walked to Kiev. And so my great-grandfather Stepan, from a rural Ukrainian-speaking boy, he moved to Kiev and, adjusted his life in a way. He remained, by the way, Ukrainian-speaking till the end of his life, in like way into 90s. But he had to live in mainly Russian-speaking city. And when my grandfather was born in 1945, he was still raised in a Ukrainian-speaking family, but it was not as, the tie was not as deep anymore. And growing up in a Russian-speaking city, my grandfather, Vova, he quite quickly, he became a Russian speaker in a public life. So he raised his children in a Russian speaking environment.
Yeah, because Russian was perceived as something that is prestigious, as something that will help you to advance within the Soviet society, something that will get you a good job. And of course, Ukrainian wasn't officially banned, right? But at the same time, we all, including probably our generation, we all grew up with this sort of conditioning, even if it's not, it has been vocalized, but still, that Russian is a more cool language, And you will go further if you are a Russian-speaking person and you're, you know, assumed to more educated. And this is something that it runs through the story of your family as well.
Yeah, for sure. I was also going to say that I think for everyone who from the outside has been trying to understand the way that language works in Ukraine and who speaks what and speaking what language, you know, means that you're this or that. But actually in Ukraine, you have to understand the historical context as well about how people came about speaking the languages that they do speak today. And you know, how, as we always talk about this, Russian imperialism and colonialism put an actual kind of, there was an actual policy to make sure that Ukrainian was forgotten and not spoken and illegal and so on and so forth. And I'm sure all of us have like loads of stories. And I think that's why Stas's thread resonated so well, because I think a lot of Ukrainians just knew exactly what you were talking about and could relate. I think, you know, I was just thinking my one, I think this was probably my first act of like resistance against Russian imperialism. But in my school, all our classes were in Ukrainian, and I went to an international school in Kiev. So it was Ukrainian and English. And when time came to choose which foreign language we were going to study, we had the option of French, German and Russian. And I remember so strongly my mom saying that I should probably study Russian just because I speak it at home, so I probably should know how to write it. And I just remember having the biggest fight of my life with my parents and saying, I'm only going to try and learn French or German. And I, out of my own sort of, I don't even know what it was, I'm not going to study Russian, even though I speak it. But I think a lot of Ukrainian kids always felt that there was this, you know, strange feeling of, I don't know, something that was imposed on you that we were sort of trying to push back.
Well, I was a kid who went to school already first year of Ukrainian independence, but still that legacy was really still there for many years, because I remember that my school was a Russian language school in eastern Ukraine, in Zaporizhia, and I remember when I would spend too much time in a village where we come from, and my grandparents would speak Ukrainian and my father speaks Ukrainian, my mother speaks Russian, and I would come back to school with really this heavy Ukrainian accent, and instantly I would be bullied and ridiculed by other kids, but also by some teachers, you know, saying that, well, this is, you know, this sujik or whatever, this is a sign that you're like uneducated idiot. And basically, you know, coming from a village, and this is something that I wouldn't kind of unpack only later in my life. And Stas, I wanted to actually ask you, because in the thread, you actually explain how this conditioning took roots, especially during the 30s and through the Holodomor genocide, and how Russian colonialism and Russians, without explicitly banning Ukrainian language, they made it extremely unpopular to use. So can you also talk about this a bit, since again, explaining Ukraine is your speciality, and I really love you know, seeing how you do it in such a simple, accessible way.
Holodomor is one of the factors here, because it's such a multifactorial thing. Again, before Soviets came to power, Ukrainians were massively like living in rural areas. Yeah, they were not that present in cities. And despite all these like attempts by Russia to ban it, to ban education, to ban printing of books in Ukrainian, the language still preserved, because like people were just continuing to talk Ukrainian as they did, with some mixes of Russian, but that's a different story. But Holodomor and then Second World War were these events of basically genocide and mass extermination. And Holodomor hit especially hardly rural population. So after Holodomor, after executive renaissance of 1930s, which is, again, a huge process of exterminating all the Ukrainian-speaking intelligentsia, like educators, writers, artists, hundreds were executed and thousands were just fired from their jobs or sent to Siberia. So after that, and after the Second World War, which took lives of about 8 million Ukrainians, I mean, you have to understand what kind of devastation our nation was in. It was completely decapitated because there were no people who could lead younger Ukrainians, who could educate them. And also all these rural populations, they were basically starved into submission by the Soviets. So after World War II, these new norms of, put in Russian nation as this victorious nation in the Second World War. Again, it was an easy policy to make precisely because Ukraine went through this complete disaster. And so people were just, there was just not enough, conscious protest against these policies, I think.
Yeah, and I want to quote from your thread exactly, exactly about that. So you say, you described the situation where your grandparents switched to Russian from Ukrainian. And you say, I once asked my grandma why they decided to speak Russian in their family, since both Vova and her were Ukrainian speaking initially. She said it wasn't a conscious decision. It was something that just happened. Grandma once recalled how in the late 60s, she used to walk to work past this corner in Khrushchev Street in central Kyiv. It was the block where the remaining alt intelligentsia lived and was the only place in Kyiv where she could hear spoken Ukrainian. So that's how they switched to Russian in their family, because Ukrainian was useless everywhere in life, because Ukrainian used to draw suspicion and nonconformity, something you fear the most while living in totalitarian state. Yeah, I think it perfectly describes this this situation, how in colonial state you basically are forced to give up your language without explicitly banning.
Yeah, and it partially also explains why now Ukrainians choosing to speak Ukrainian, and not just Ukrainians, but people choosing to speak Ukrainian is not just like, it's like an apolitical action, it's like a political choice, because and it shows how connected language has been to, the system of domination, I guess, for a very long time, that we lived under, not just us, but everyone else. And I think my favorite highlight was I went for some training thing in Georgia and Tbilisi, and I caught myself at one point speaking to a Georgian, an Armenian, an Azerbaijani, and myself, a Ukrainian. We were all speaking to each other in English and not in Russian, although we all could speak Russian. And I thought that was quite like a cool, we didn't even like try hard, it just happened naturally. And I think it just shows that this situation was probably not unique to Ukraine. Although in Ukraine, as Stas was saying, Holodomor and things like that had a really intense effect as well on how we communicated in general in our lives and everything else. So that's super interesting as well. And I think what you were talking about as well, I think we speak, actually, this is a whole other topic we can talk about at some point, but I guess like in a lot of the conversations around Ukraine, we barely ever talk about the Ukrainian village and Ukrainian village life and Ukrainian way of life outside of the big cities. And that's a whole, big topic as well that I feel like Western friends sometimes overlook, because it's own set of traditions and things like that. And my grandma used to always talk about it. And I guess it's just so important as well. Somehow language comes into this as well, into play?
Farmer's voice here. Yeah, I'm from a farm. So actually, you know, my village pride is represented well here. But this is a powerful point. And this is maybe I also want Stas to chip in, because you're absolutely right, because a lot of foreigners have no idea when you travel to villages in eastern Ukraine and southern Ukraine, and these regions are universally abroad perceived as so-called Russian speaking. So I can tell you that nobody speaks Russian in those villages. So the only people who speak Russian, they would speak it in the big cities, and cities were always a focal point of Russian expansion, Russian colonialism since like many decades and centuries. So once you step outside in a village in Zaporizhia or Kherson or Donbas, nobody would ever use Russian to communicate. And I think this is a powerful illustration how these, you know, policies of suppressing Ukrainian language turn out to be, and how then, you know, so they contributed to this mythology that there is like so-called Russian speaking East and West and Ukrainian speaking, East and South and Ukrainian speaking West, which is total bullshit. I really wanted to ask you maybe about your also manifestation of this in your personal life. Are you, I mean, we're all now Ukrainian speaking people, but how, when you were growing up, how you understood or how you explained to even yourself why we speak two languages interchangeably, and why your family, you know, didn't prioritize Ukrainian and so on. Was it kind of a moment when you started asking yourself these questions, or was it much later?
Yeah, language and identity, it's a funny thing in Ukraine, because for a long time, I didn't really connect these two things in my head. And I think so many Ukrainians didn't do this as well, because, well, you just grew up in a Russian-speaking family, you feel Ukrainian, you don't feel Russian at all, but for some reason, you just, you know, go on with your life speaking Russian, also speaking Ukrainian in, I don't know, state bureaucracy stuff, education, but it coexists quite peacefully, and usually only, like, this topic was politicized only in a negative sense for some time, I think, because when politicians or media were trying to create the sense of disunited nation, they would bring out the language card, start saying that, you know, somebody is making somebody speak Russian or Ukrainian. But it feels, yeah, super, super chill to, well, at least it felt super chill to be growing in a Russian-speaking family in Kyiv, but be 100% Ukrainian in your head.
Yeah, and it was a marvelous thing when people, like, one person would speak Ukrainian, the other would speak Russian. They would never switch, never change. Everybody would understand each other perfectly. But this is, say, for example, unreachable for a Russian person who, you know, from Russia, Россиянин, who usually they do not understand Ukrainian at all. So this situation would be sounding and looking totally bizarre for them.
You know, I have a very weird observation about Russians understanding Ukrainian. We all know as Ukrainians that Russians have much more trouble understanding Ukrainian, at least especially spoken Ukrainian. But when I was watching some of the videos of Russian soldiers that were captured in Ukraine, and local people would speak to them in Ukrainian, or for example, medics would speak to them in Ukrainian. And I realized that actually they can understand some parts of Ukrainian a lot better than they told themselves they could. And I think this is such a showing thing that this is again the imperial thinking at work, that I think in most cases they just felt they like, why even try understanding Ukrainian if I can just, you know, come in, assume my power, and just make everybody speak in the way that I understand. So yeah, and suddenly these soldiers that were captured in Ukraine, they were stripped of this privilege, and yeah, and suddenly they could understand parts of Ukrainian.
Yeah, and this is also something we talked as Ukrainians a lot before the genocide about our relation to Russian and Ukrainian, and you know, building bilingual nation where language is not such an important focal point. And I'm a Russian speaking Ukrainian. I used to be, and I was really proud about it. I was you know, even trying to make a political statement by using Russian all the time, saying that Russian language does not belong to Russia. And it's actually factually, the amount of people who are not ethnically Russian and speak Russian in their everyday life is much bigger than the population of ethnic Russians in general. But now, of course, the situation, I mean, I cannot force myself to use Russian anymore. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but no. I just can't.
I totally understand that. I think it's like, we spoke about this, I think, in one of our other podcasts as well. It's also like, it's harder to switch from one language to another when it's people you know and have always spoken in that same language. Like with my parents, I still find it hard to switch from Russian into Ukrainian, but new people that I meet, like you guys, like a lot of other people, I definitely don't feel comfortable at all straight away going into Russian, although I can if I wish to. But I also, I think it's just, I don't know. As I said, I think now it's more than anything, almost like a political choice that a lot of us are making.
Look, I think maybe Stas won't mind, but I really want to ask Val a question. Again, since this question comes from our patron, Ashley, and guys, this is one of the ways for you to participate in conversation, to support us on Patreon, and then our patrons and sponsors get front row seat when it comes to asking questions. So Ashley has a question that is based on this issue that, you know, sometimes foreigners ask or suggest, or we also had a conversation about Ukraine switching towards Latin alphabet in kind of a statement of decolonial statement or something like that. And I know that all of you guys had very strong views on it. So, Val, what do you think about it? Like, do you support it, or does it irritates you for any reason?
I'm also gonna say that, like, my opinions are changing sometimes quite quickly considering how much is happening in Ukraine and outside of Ukraine, so don't hold me accountable for this in a month. But for some reason, I like don't want to give up our, you know, the way that we've been writing and our alphabet. Like, why should we just because another, anyway, loads of languages use similar alphabets that doesn't mean, like Cyrillic or Latin, doesn't mean anything as long as people acknowledge and appreciate the fact that Ukrainian is a separate language. I always give, like, you know, when people ask me, oh, Ukrainian and Russian, like, how similar are they? I sometimes, like, give the example of French, Italian, Spanish. You know, they use the same alphabet, but they're different languages and no one questions that they're different languages. So it should be no different between Russian and Ukrainian, I guess, you know, France, Italy, and what did I say? France, Italy, and Spain never colonized each other. So, you know, there was no, like, one power that was, I mean, maybe they did. Maybe my history is off. But you know what I mean? Not for such a long time, not for centuries. So it's just a matter of, like, for us, it's like a matter of, like, trying to fight against an oppressive, dominating power in the way that we want people to understand Ukrainian. But I don't know. I don't necessarily think it needs changing of an alphabet.
Yeah, Stas, any strong views on the issue of Cyrillic versus Latin in Ukrainian?
Yeah, I actually had one person on Twitter commenting my thread with the same question. So totally agree. I don't think it's an issue, us using the Cyrillic alphabet. First of all, we have unique symbols in our Ukrainian Cyrillic alphabet that is that are not present in Russian. Second of all, I think people assume that Cyrillic alphabet is basically Russia's property, which is not, because it was developed before Russia was around, and it actually has this kind of South Slavic origins. So I think it's
we taught Russia this Cyrillic. You know, of course, they haven't invented it. It came from, you know, Balkans in South Europe, but it came to Moscow from Kiev, and it was used in Kiev hundreds of years before Moscow even existed.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't think that this is the way to decolonize our culture. But at the same time, I feel quite, you know, relaxed about these attempts of some people to try to mix it up and sometimes use Latinized Ukraine. I know there's a media called Nachasi that writes in Latinized Ukraine, and I think it's fine. It's like, why not mix it up?
Yeah.
But I don't think it's some kind of, you know, crucial point of this struggle that we're having.
Yeah. We don't talk about other Russian colonies here, but this is a great point, and for other folks maybe to explore and educate. There are similar conversations that are happening, for example, in Kazakhstan that would use Cyrillic in the Kazakh language, which was completely forced by Russian colonization, and that's why them switching back is a kind of a decolonial process. And for example, similar conversations in Belarusian that was originally in Latin and then was forced into Cyrillic. But the Ukrainian case is completely different. Nobody forced on us. We were the first one to use it. That's why, I mean, knowing other Slavic languages, I find it extremely well adopted for Slavic language, Cyrillic, not Latin, but this is just my personal opinion. But again,
But it's also like, I hope our audiences who are listening to us realize that, you know, for us, as I said, yes, it's a political choice, but at the same time, we feel quite, I almost relaxed about some parts of this discussion, right? Like, because for us, language, yes, there's elements to it that, you know, have been caused by like Russia's oppressive regime and things like that. But at the end of the day, I don't know, this is maybe again controversial in my personal opinion, but I acknowledge and I understand where all of these things come from and why we speak the languages that we speak. But at the same time, I know that it doesn't like define a person, what language they speak, what alphabet they use, and so on and so forth. I do sometimes think that like outside audiences and Western audiences sometimes put too much of a focus on language in Ukraine. And whilst it's important to learn it in the context of Russian colonialism and imperialism, I think in modern Ukraine, it's just, we've been talking about this for such a long time, right, Maxim? Like the diversity of Ukrainians in all its forms and languages and religions and so on. We just need to acknowledge that and make sure that people know about it. You guys have both seen my attempts at using Latin. My work laptop made the decision about which alphabet I use itself. I don't have Cyrillic on my work laptop, so I sometimes write in this like terrible Latin version of Ukrainian that just doesn't work.
That's the best way to encrypt your message, you know. Nobody outside of Ukraine would understand. Like it's not Google translatable at all.
No, it's not at all.
But I also sometimes a bit I'm sad about this that the genocide made us so uncomfortable speaking both languages, because one of the, and maybe some folks who are bilingual here, they will totally understand, when you grow up speaking various languages at the time, and there are even studies confirming that your brain is wired a bit differently. Not only you get better at learning other languages, but also the way you empathize is much better when you speak two languages, when you're bilingual. Since scientists say it opens up, it makes you more sensitive towards other perspectives. And this is something that I think in Ukraine we should be really cherishing. I mean, of course, this is a colonial legacy, but if we must find a way to reclaim it and making the status, bilingual status in life in our country, having some sense besides colonialism, I think that's also a beautiful point to look at it. Just it makes us more empathetic, notwithstanding more educated, since folks know so many more languages. Also, guys, maybe you also chip in because Ashley also asked about any other examples that the Ukrainian language continues to be colonized by Russia, and how can those of us outside of Ukraine can help to challenge those, talking points about the language. So it's a bit two-sided question. But yeah, first, apart from geographical names, because I think that's been explained to foreigners enough. And if by now, by this time, you still do not use the names of our cities and the name of our country the way we ask you to use, I think you're like a lost case. But maybe you can name other examples of this manifestation of Ukrainian language suffering from Russian colonial pressure.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure it's like 100% exactly what the question was about, but I recently found it fascinating and actually horrified by it. Did you see that Russians in the occupied lands in the south and east, one of the first things they did was change these symbols and road signs from Ukrainian and English versions into Russian?
Yeah.
So again,
it's for those foreigners who say that it doesn't matter why you get upset all about it. And
yeah,
for Russians, they come and like, yeah, we change everything. All road signs in Russian again, switch it back at like it was 30 years ago.
Yeah, Ukrainians, like for 30 years, Ukrainians were always told that, don't politicize the language question. It's too complicated. Why do you want to even touch this topic? Let's just live as we lived. It's fine. But if you look at what Russia is doing, it actually weaponizes language all the time. And it has been this way for centuries.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think, remember you mentioned about how in Ukraine this issue would be artificially polarized, during some election campaigns. And I just wanted to add to this that this polarization would usually happen from pro-Russian parties or Russia-aligned parties, because this is the trick that Russian colonialism would use for many, decades at least, to inflate, to stoke those ethnic language divides, artificially inflate them so they can just, divide and rule.
Yeah.
This has been quite successful, unfortunately, for Ukraine for many years as well.
M has then also trickled out into foreign coverage by, connecting language with ethnicity and dividing people in different ways. I was also going to say, I know that that Ashley asked for what else can people do and how can they challenge some of these assumptions about Ukrainian and Russian and stuff like that. I think I would start with, I still get it, actually. It's really weird. I still get it. And I understand that it comes from a good place, but people asking, how different are the two languages? Just don't do that, please. I'm like happy to send you to Stas's thread and show a little bit more about the history, but just avoid that question if you can. They're different. There's a reason there are different languages. I just can't believe we still need to explain it sometimes.
Stas, any ideas how what kind of effective talking points or maybe facts people can bring up in the conversation, especially when they're faced with these intentional or non-intentional colonial views of Ukraine as this divided into differently speaking polities, and you know, people speaking Russian and Ukrainian, completely different people, and so on. In your, from your personal experience, what do you use usually to decolonize that?
Yeah, I think Val has got a super valid point that you know, one of the best ways to have a good conversation with Ukrainian about language is to avoid these cliches of just a simple question like, is Ukrainian and Russian really the same language or are they different? Just, you know, dig deeper a little bit. Ask, for example, you know, are you bilingual? Which language did you speak at home or something like that? I mean, of course, these questions might be too intimate. I get it. But I would say don't just repeat these cliches and narratives that are there in the common mind, but try to reflect on it and after that come up with a question, basically.
Yeah. Ooh, I have another one. I just thought of it. I don't know how important. I've been trying to do it a little bit more, but when you're talking to like Ukraine, I really enjoy pronouncing names in the Ukrainian way. So like in Russian, you'd say my name would be like Valeria, but in Ukrainian it's Valeria, and it's a little bit different, but I quite enjoy doing it. I'm sure it's the same, like Maxim versus Maxim. Tiny things, but you know, I just really enjoy it.
You said my name in Russian way, and this is something I've been fighting for many years, because especially Russian speaking people would automatically pronounce my name in Russian way, which I really hated since I was like even a kid. And I'm like, no, please, I'm not Maxim, I'm Maxim. And this is like a very strong I there. So please do not mispronounce my name, because this is probably the most personal thing you can have, your name. And yet still people would do it and call me by Russian name. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted. It's Stas. Yeah.
No, actually, I have a similar story with my surname, because it starts with an O and ends with an O. And for those of you who don't know, Russians tend to pronounce O as A. So in Ukrainian, my surname would sound like Olenchenko, and nobody would distort it in any way. But in Russian, it sounds Olenchenko. And this would just completely blow my mind, and I would get like it's like an instant way to trigger me. Always has been.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, people also pay attention to that, because it's quite, especially these days, it's quite insulting if you mispronounce at least our names, not saying even our cities. But I think I have a good one that would usually work all the time. So when people say like, what's the big deal, Russian, you know, Ukrainian, whatever, especially those who confront, like if you speak Russian, you're probably Russian, ethnic Russian or whatever nonsense, I always remind people that there are so many people who speak French, who speak English, who speak Spanish as their first language, not because they're Spanish, French or English, and it does not make them part of those communities, part of those nations, but because of colonial legacy. And I think in Ukraine, a lot of people speak Russian or use it interchangeably with Ukrainian exactly because of that, because not because they're ethnically Russian or identify with Russia, just because this is another colonial language and this is the legacy that we share with so many other foreign colonies. So yeah, maybe bring up that example, and I think it works for many people because it's kind of an aha moment. I think I would rather also ask Stas, like, you see how this attitude towards language is changing, and especially during genocide, and people find it hard to speak in speak Russian, or you know, even be in situations where I hate when, for example, someone assumes that they can speak to me in Russian just because they hear Ukrainian, especially foreigners, and think that it's, you know, whatever, it's Russian. But, for example, have you found yourself in similar situations? Because before I wouldn't mind, like, if people assume I speak Russian or Ukrainian, whatever, I don't care. But now I feel like kind of extra insulted if people assume that I'm Russian just because they heard something similar. Is it something that is also happening to you? Because I think it's important for folks to get this nuance these days as well.
Yeah, totally. I think I was irritated by these, you know, little details before the war. Probably since 2014, like, because in 2014 Russia annexed Crimea and started the war in Donbass, there was already this resentment and this idea that, you know, I want to separate myself from this Russian dominated idea of Eastern Ukraine and post-Soviet quote-unquote countries. Right now I have the same thing. Like, I just get irritated. I haven't had this situation after the war started, but before that, if somebody would hear I'm from Ukraine and for example in a shop and say spasiba, I would just be, you know, at the same time I would be irritated, but I would also feel that I don't have mental resources right now to, you know, start this conversation here with this man that I know for 2 minutes and explain that, listen, this is Russian, you're speaking Russian, I'm from Ukraine, we have a separate word for spasiba, it's dyakuyu. You know, learn it, please. It's not fair. It's not something that me and probably many other Ukrainians enjoy hearing. Probably after the start of this genocide, I just realized that, you know, I have to engage in these discussions more and more. Yeah. Because, yeah, it's just something that it's about time. And we just, if I'm in a position to bring a little bit of that knowledge out, then I just have to do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for that. I just instantly remember a situation just from, you know, a couple of weeks into the genocide, and I was at this fundraiser abroad, and some people that I sort of know, and they approach me right away, and they start speaking, and they're Western Europeans, and they start automatically speak to me in Russian. And because, I mean, at some situation, maybe we use Russian or whatever. And I understand that it might come from good place. Like, people want to be polite and use a language that it's closer to me. But at that point, I felt so insulted. And I confronted person saying, like, why would you think that it's okay to address me in Russian at this moment? The situations like these are unfortunately very common. And this is a reminder for other folks that just trying to be a bit sensitive would always help. But also think, again, in terms of colonialism, in terms of what Ukrainians are going through and how they even rethink the way they speak and the language they use. And sometimes it's okay just to double check and to ask which language you prefer to use. And this is not so hard, right? Maybe, Stas, if you wanted to highlight something, especially for journalists, especially for folks that help us to amplify Ukrainian stories and stories of Ukrainians, when they approach or when they mention a language issue in any way in their reporting or in their storytelling, what would you recommend to be cautious, or how to double check yourself so you're not spreading or amplifying some, you know, colonial shitty narratives about Ukrainians and the languages they use in everyday life?
Well, probably the mixture of language use, national or ethnic identity, and political affiliation, these three things are often get mixed in many, you know, mainstream media coverage of Ukraine. So I would suggest instead of just writing, you know, Russian-speaking region of Ukraine, or pro-Russian, I don't know, pro-Russian region of Ukraine. I think I even read something like that at some point. I would suggest, you know, just maybe talk to somebody who is a Ukrainian, who knows a little bit more about it. Maybe look at the sociological data that is not global, but local. We have sociological groups that are doing their fantastic job, and they have reports in English. So, and they do a very good job of, you know, separating these things of language, ethnic identity, and political views. So, yeah, I think every time you write, you touch any of these three subjects, please double check them and see if you did not mix them up in the way that it spreads ambiguous message.
Yeah, do not link them. I think that would be, yeah, thank you so much. I think that's a very helpful strategy. If you want to link everything, ethnicity, language, you know, Russians, Ukrainians, that if you have this already line of thought, that's probably the wrong way right away.
Yeah. Also, I just wanted to add a small little thing about this thread and also our cards, Ukraine Explainers cards on language. You mentioned that, you know, this perception is changing, and I also felt a little bit this way because I had a lot of people just simply writing things like, thank you, it explained a lot to me, or thank you, I think now I understand better, you know, language use in Ukraine. And these like super simple comments were the best comments, I think, for me, because it was super clear that people had this mixture of narratives, this mess, and something that we do, something that including Ukrainian spaces, helps them to untie these mixed up narratives and make a better picture of modern Ukraine.
100%. And you know, the reason for a lot of that confusion and lack of information is because Ukrainians have not been the ones leading a lot of the discourse and information exchange on the topic of Ukraine, which is why a lot of people are still confused, because no one has been listening to us, which we're trying to do now. So thank you so much to you for coming to talk to us, and for everyone else for listening to us.
And folks, and also don't forget to support Ukrainian Space, especially if you love this chat. Become our sponsor through Patreon. It will provide you with a lot of cool bonus stuff, as well as a front row in asking questions and participating in Q&A in person or through messages you can send in advance. Anyhow, just check our Patreon's page and see what gets you the sponsorship. We really, really appreciate your support. And for those who listen to us on Spotify and Apple, after you're done, please also rate us and left a review or comment, because it will push us up and we're already trending. So thank you for that. But we need much more to make sure that Ukrainian voices are amplified and heard on podcast platforms as well. So use also Ukrainian Spaces hashtag in between broadcasts to suggest guests, topics, or if you're Ukrainian, just share your stories. We always love to read them out loud because so much of it is so beautiful and powerful, especially these days. Okay, guys, that's it for today. We'll see you soon. The announcements are going to be out soon on our next show. Meanwhile, Slava Ukraini.
Hello, I'm Slava.
Hello, I'm Slava.
Bye, guys.
Bye, everybody. Bye.